This is Candace.
And this is Elena.
And this is Cousins on Crime. Hey guys, welcome back.
Hello.
Thank you for coming back. I knew you'd come back for more. I knew you'd come crawling back. They always do.
They always do.
In part one, we talked about Cullen Davis and his marriage, his divorce, his mansion. We talked about the murders that happened at his mansion and how he was acquitted of murdering a 12-year-old girl and was never charged with the other crimes that he allegedly committed. So if you have not listened to that episode, episode 3, part one, go right on ahead and listen to it because, well, you're going to want to listen to that.
Yeah.
Where we left you off was that once he was acquitted, he went back to his lavish lifestyle. And we talked about how his divorce still wasn't finalized at that time. And they were still battling it out for the money. Well, 9 months after he was acquitted, a man named David McCrory, that's hard to say, he was a friend of Cullen Davis. He came forward and told the FBI that Cullen had been asking him to find a hitman to execute a kill list. And there were 15 people on that list.
Okay.
So on that list, could you guess who was at the top?
Priscilla.
Yeah, that would be it. And next was the judge that was presiding over their divorce case. And even the judge's wife was on that list. Yeah, he was about to take everybody out.
Was this a written list like David could give to the police?
I actually don't know if this was an actual written list, but he met with him and basically he had named all these names. I'm not sure if he actually gave him a physical list, but the FBI was like, what the heck? And also, okay.
Yeah.
So they devised a sting operation. And they knew that this time they were going to nail Cullen. They knew that now they had the evidence to put him away. So the judge that was presiding over his divorce case, Judge Joe Edson, he got wadded up in the back of a trunk car, the trunk of a car, and they smeared McDonald's ketchup all over the back of his shirt.
It's like a movie.
And it is. And they like threw some ropes in there and just made it look like he was dead. And, you know, back in that day, there were color photographs, but this particular photo was in black and white.
Okay.
So it is pretty convincing. And I'll post it on our Instagram. But because it was in black and white, like, you can't really tell it's ketchup. So he looked dead in the photo.
Wow.
And there was actually a few photos, but they gave him this photo and they told him, okay, I want you to show this to Cullen as proof that you've taken care of one of the people on his list and see what he does. So they wired David and the meeting was all set between him and Cullen. So the police were parked in unmarked cars with their camcorders rolling. And I'm sorry if you're too young to know what camcorders are. Back in the day, we didn't have smartphones with video cameras on them.
Little tiny cameras.
Big old camcorders. And that was back in the 80s when I was born. So 10 years prior to that, they were probably even more clunky. So they're filming and Cullen drives up. David was already there. And they had a long conversation, but I'm going to read you just like a little part of their conversation. David said, I got the judge dead for you. Cullen said, good. David said, I'll get the rest of them dead for you. You want a bunch of people dead, right? Cullen said, All right. And David said, am I right? And Cullen said, all right. There was so much more that they taped, but basically, there was no possible way Cullen was getting out of this. There was just no way because
Right.
he was on the tape saying that he wanted them dead, and he even went to his trunk and pulled out $25,000 in cash
Okay.
and gave it to David and told him that, hey, give me plenty of time before you kill Priscilla because I need to come up with an alibi. So give me like ample time, ample warning so that I can think of something.
Right.
He's like, yeah, sure thing, I'll let you know. So Cullen drives away, and once David gets into his car, he says, I've got the money. So the police swoop in, and just as Cullen is pulling out of that parking lot, they arrested him.
He's taken down. All right.
The investigators, the DA, they thought, we've got him this time. There's no way he's weaseling his way out of this. We've got him on tape. It's his voice. We have video evidence that he was there. He said these things. We have him giving the money to
The
David. There's
money,
just like no way he's getting out of this. Well, remember Colin's attorney who got him acquitted of murdering a 12-year-old girl?
right.
Okay, well, he was at it again. And
So he does a good job at, he's really good
Oh,
at his
yeah,
job.
he was really good at his job. So, of course, Cullen calls him up. And actually, before Cullen contacted him, someone in the media had contacted him and said, what do you think about this? And he said, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, he didn't have a chance to talk to Cullen yet. Cullen hadn't gotten his phone call yet. So he was just scratching his head, like,
Caught off
dude,
guard.
really? Like, I got you off for murder. What is this
Here we
now?
go. Right.
But the defense strategy and what they claimed, Elena, I'm a little embarrassed to even say it.
I don't think I even want to know. Oh,
I'm
no.
embarrassed. Cullen said that he was the one working for the FBI. He said he got a phone call one day from an anonymous FBI agent and they wanted to trap David and they needed his help to do it.
Okay.
So they said, play along with this. We need to get this guy David because he's around killing people. We just need to take him down. So pretend like you have people you want killed. I mean,
And
what?
who were the supposed contacts of the FBI?
Well, good question. He didn't have a name. He didn't have a number. He didn't have a date they called. He didn't have a time they called. Okay, I've got some questions. Why was David so important that they needed this sting for him? And why was Cullen the one arrested when they parted ways? I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Cullen said
Oh,
that
my Lord.
he was just going along with the FBI's plan to entrap David. And that the money that he gave to David was actually David's money all along that he was asked to hold for him. It was David's gambling winnings. And David said, hey, Cullen, can you hang on to this 25 G's for me and like give it back to me later? So he said that's what he was giving him. It was just his money in the
Oh my
first place.
gosh.
Right. So this wild story was never mentioned when Cullen was arrested that day, like right after the
Okay.
exchange, you would think.
Right.
You know what I'm
Wait,
saying?
wait, 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 wait. Let's.
Right.
This is, you got me all wrong. This is the story. No.
Exactly. So Prosecutor Strickland didn't believe this story either, like you and I.
Good.
And he said, I don't think the FBI would entrust him to mail a letter for them.
I would hope not.
Yeah. So he knew that they had him this time. They thought, there's no way that a jury is going to buy this. And by the way, the FBI denied they ever called him. And I think they would remember such an elaborate ruse, don't you think?
Right.
There would be
And the
documentation of
FBI
that.
wouldn't lie, right?
Correct. The FBI would not lie.
Hopefully.
Well, the jury deliberated for 2 days. and they were deadlocked. 8 voted for guilty, 4 voted for acquittal. So the judge declared a mistrial.
Oh, geez. Who are these four?
I don't know. I don't know. That ridiculous story about Cullen working for the FBI was
Was
just stupid
believable.
and confusing enough for some of the jurors that they just couldn't get past it. And I just, I'm thinking they were just so confused. Like, what's his name? Racehorse Haynes probably muddied the water just enough that they were spinning their wheels thinking, well, it could. I guess that could have happened. Dumb. So, of course, the state was outraged, and Strickland was like, no, I'm not letting this go. We're gonna do the right thing. We're gonna try him again, and we're gonna get a new jury that's gonna do the right thing. So at the second hitman trial, the state basically presented all the exact same evidence that they did in the first trial. It was basically copy and paste. They didn't need to do anything else. They had 4 tapes
Oh my
of
goodness.
these conversations. The defense, however, thought, let's do something different. They called a new witness, Professor of Linguistics Roger Shy from Georgetown University. And he testified that he analyzed the tapes and he believed that David McCrory was leading the conversation and trying to elicit specific responses from Cullen Davis.
Okay, but if they're not true responses, then why would he just say?
Exactly. Which is it? Was Cullen going along with it or was he being led? Well, this jury was able to reach a verdict. Can you guess what that was?
Please don't tell me not guilty.
Was not guilty.
Oh my goodness.
Not guilty. The judge himself is on record saying the F word in response to the verdict. Just a gross display of privilege and wealth, and that basically you can get away with just about anything if you're Cullen Davis.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, and the jury didn't just hear that small excerpt that I read. Like I said, there were 4 tapes of the two of them conversating. It was clear what they were meeting about, and it was clear that Cullen was the mastermind. He was the one prompting the responses from David because he was the one leading the conversation to where it was going. And here's some food for thought as well. If Cullen is telling the truth about him being the one that was working with the FBI, why wasn't he wearing the wire at the meeting that day? Why was David wearing the wire?
Come on, people, use your heads.
Okay, and when he was presented the photograph of the dead judge, he seemed happy about that.
He said good.
He said, good. If you were trying to entrap a hitman for the FBI, wouldn't you freak out just a little bit that he'd actually killed somebody that you fake told him to kill? You know what I mean? He didn't miss a beat. And again, he didn't say anything about this when they arrested him. So why? I need those questions answered, Colin. He didn't just get his way with the murder and attempted murder charges. He didn't just overcome the solicitation to commit murder charge slash charges. He also came out on top in his divorce case.
Oh my gosh.
He only ended up having to pay Priscilla $3 million, which was just pocket money for him at the time. He also got his mansion back.
Of course he did.
Well, life went on for him after his 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 70th trial. He married his girlfriend Karen, and he even
Oh,
adopted her
Karen.
son Trey, that was from her previous relationship. And you know how they say the rich get richer? Well, luckily that didn't happen for him. Things went pretty south for him financially. His business went under. There was a recession in the mid-80s, and he had to file for bankruptcy. He sold his mansion and all that land to a real estate developer in 1984, and he moved into a modest home in the burbs in Colleyville, Texas. This was about 25 minutes from Fort Worth, where he did live. And I mentioned in part one the video of the guys who broke in and explored the mansion. Well, it was abandoned, like I said at the time. No one was living there when they broke in 1991. The video is just super creepy, and I'll be honest with you. I know there are a bunch of twerps who broke into a house, but I'm really jealous they got to walk around in there
Yeah, I
because
would like to.
I was watching the video last night, and Daniel was like, "What are you watching?" Because like one of the guys is carrying like a cane. They're in like camo cargo pants, and he keeps going, "Turn the light off, turn the light off." And
Oh my goodness.
he's like, "Dude, we can't see if we turn the light off." And she's like, "They're like, let's go to the basement." Well, there was like a couple different sets of stairs that went down to the basement. They went down to the basement, and one of the stairwells leading down to the basement, there was a big blood swipe on the wall, like on top of like
No.
there was wallpaper on the like in the stairwell, and there was a big blood swipe.
Okay, but Colin, he got the mansion back, but didn't do anything. Wait, and Priscilla lived there after the murder too. So did they just not go back down there and
I have no idea.
clean it up?
Did you know that in most cases you have to hire someone yourself to clean a crime scene at your house?
Yeah, there's a crime scene there's a crime scene cleanup
Yeah, but
crew
you
that
have to,
comes. Yeah,
like
I've
the
heard that.
victim's family, they don't just come in and clean your house and clean up the crime scene for you. They leave it, like the police, they don't just come in and clean up the crime scene.
They don't.
No. So maybe some states and maybe some jurisdictions do that, but for the most part, the victim's family has to clean that up. I mean, I've heard of cases where.
Oh, I have heard of crime scene cleanup crews coming in, but I don't know if it's like, does the victim's family have to pay for that, or where they come from? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if if maybe the police department will put someone in touch with a company that does it, or if there's like a liaison who'll set it up. I really don't know. But hey, and if you know the answer to that question, why don't you slide into our email at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com, because I would like to know that. That's interesting to me. But it looked like blood in the video. It really did look like blood. And then so they go
Gotcha.
down to the basement, and when they're down in the basement, there was this like little, you just hopped up in this little crawl space looking thing, and it was a tunnel. There were like tunnels going all through the bottom of the house. And it had like all the electricals and pipes, and you know how I told you everything was automated in part one?
Okay.
Well,
Oh,
all
yeah.
the controls were down there and everything. It was just weird. Little side note about that.
Yeah.
Stan Farr's son was understandably pissed off that he wasn't charged with his
Absolutely.
dad's murder. So he took out a civil suit against him. And in fact, Priscilla and her ex-husband also sued him in civil court. And Cullen settled for $250,000 for the murder of Stan Farr in civil court. Cullen said he settled knowing he'd never intended to pay them because he was broke. So he just
Oh
settled.
my
But
gosh.
here's a question. You swear you're not responsible for Stan's death, but you're going to settle in a civil suit with his son?
Right.
Why would you
If you're
do that?
not,
If you're not
right.
guilty, that's pretty much admitting guilt, I would say.
That's what it seems like.
I mean, without admitting guilt. To me, that's just admitting some sort of wrongdoing. And if he had nothing to
Right.
do with it, why settle?
Right.
Anyway, he says it's because he was broke and he didn't have the money to pay him anyway. But to me, all the more reason to stick to your guns, right?
Exactly. He may not have had to pay it at the end. Well, I mean, and he probably had to pay his attorney bukus of money. That's probably one reason he was broke, because he had this top of the,
Yeah, he was millions and millions of dollars indebted to many people. And that's why he eventually did have to file for bankruptcy. So in 1986, when I was just a baby peeing in my pants, Colin asked to meet with Jack Wilborn, and that's Andrea's father.
Okay.
Colin asked him for forgiveness because he was a changed man and had found God.
Forgiveness for what?
He said, "Will you forgive me for the things I've done?"
What things have you done, Colin?
Right. Well, Andrea's dad is quoted as saying, "I forgave you a long time ago."
Bless his heart.
Colin and his attorneys deny this meeting ever took place. So, I mean,
jeez.
In what way would Andrea's father benefit from lying about such a meeting?
Right.
I just don't know why he would lie about that.
Right.
Moving along down the corridors of time, Colin went on with his life. And in 2000, he was making... again, I'm embarrassed to even say this. He was making a small income by selling skincare cream to local businesses. I wish I was making this up. At first, I was like, was he Mary Kay? Like, was he in Mary Kay or Arbonne? Like, I've got to look.
I mean, he sounds like he would be a very good salesman. I mean, he's very convincing.
Yeah. Well, he was selling this product called Skin Pro Tech 2.
Okay.
And it was a skin, it was a cream you put on your hands or any part of your body that might come in contact with chemicals. So this cream was supposed to protect people from chemical burns. So he would go to like mechanics and doctors and I don't know, whoever else would be coming in contact with chemicals. And yeah, he had set up a little home office doing it. In fact, one of the interviews, one of the many, many interviews that he had done, this reporter said, "So what is this skincare cream or whatever?" And he's like, "Well, let me show you." So he like gets all the stuff out and he got a cup and poured some acid in it and it burned a hole right through the cup.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy's like, "Whoa, where's this going?" He's burning holes through a cup with acid. Like, how does this have anything to do with skincare cream? And Cullen gets out this cream and rubs it all over his hands. And then he pours the acid on his hand.
Oh, no.
And nothing happens. This was an elaborate demonstration. And just, you know, reading about it, I'm convinced. So he's sold me.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's what he was doing in 2000. Priscilla, she pretty much laid low. Her and Strickland, the prosecutor that was in Cullen's second and third trial, the hitman trials, they dated for a while. They actually referred to their relationship as basically a mutual understanding of each other. So through the trials, they had really gotten to know each other. They just had a lot of stuff in common. They had gone through so much together.
Right.
He said he understood her like nobody else really could. And she knew that.
Aww.
So she felt understood and just a romantic relationship formed from their friendship. And they were actually days away from getting married, but ultimately they called it off. They just didn't feel it was right.
Aww.
And they didn't want to put their families through that if it wasn't the right thing to do. But they actually stayed really close friends until she died of breast cancer in 2001.
Aww.
And Dee Davis said that her mother spent the rest of her life grieving Andrea's death and basically blaming herself for that night.
Oh,
she not only blamed herself for leaving Andrea home alone that night, but she blamed herself for ever even getting involved with Colin. And she probably had some guilt for not leaving him sooner.
Mm-hmm.
But Priscilla is a true victim here. And it really doesn't matter what sex parties she threw. It doesn't matter how she dressed. It really doesn't matter any of the things that she did because she lost her child.
Right.
She got shot. She watched her boyfriend get shot and die right in front of her and have to flee having been shot in the chest.
Right.
And
wow.
Also hearing more shots, knowing that your friends just pulled up the driveway and just living through the trauma of that night and then watching him be acquitted for murder.
Wow. It's not right. And let's say that it wasn't Colin. Let's say that it was somebody else. Who was it? Who was it?
Nobody else had the motive.
Exactly.
And, you know, to even entertain for 5 seconds their argument that Stan Farr was the intended target that night, Did they follow him there? I mean, nobody followed him there. So how did they know he was going over to Priscilla's house? That wasn't even his house.
And if that's what they're thinking, why did they not pursue any kind of, who are these drug people that he was involved with? Like, follow up with it.
Exactly. Priscilla not only lived through all of that, but she was vilified in the media. She was a very attractive woman, blonde. She had a nice body. I mean, tale as old as time. You know what I mean?
Why do we do that to people?
Because it's interesting, I guess. He didn't really have anything to say in his defense other than poke holes in the eyewitness's story. And how you do that is you discredit
Right.
the main witness, your ex-wife, by saying, oh, she's just framing me. She hates me. She wants all my money. And look at her. Look at all these things she's done and whatever. I mean, they do this all the
Right.
time to victims' families. Sometimes in trials, they'll dig up a bunch of dirt on a victim and basically say they had it coming or they got themselves killed or what have you. So we've seen it time and
Yeah.
time again. But in 2004, this was interesting. An inmate on death row who was there for a completely unrelated case said he wanted to set the record straight about the Fort Worth Mansion murders, but
Okay.
he never elaborated and was then executed. They never went and spoke with him. He never told anybody. I think it was one of those just to see how much he could stir up and maybe see if he could get his execution date delayed or whatever, you know what
Oh.
I mean? But it didn't work and he's dead.
Wow.
So I thought I'd just throw that in there because I thought it was a little interesting.
That is interesting.
It gets weirder, Lena. It gets weirder. In December of 2009, Priscilla's son Jackie was found slumped over, dead, on a bench on a picnic table in a park in Fort Worth.
Okay. What was the cause of death?
The medical examiner determined that he died accidentally of a combination of alcohol and morphine. And his stuff was in a bag on the table in front of him. They were like, okay. So they looked up his parents to notify, like, his family that he was found dead. They couldn't locate his parents because they were dead. So they couldn't locate a next of
Oh.
kin. So they just buried him in an unmarked grave.
No.
Yeah, his family didn't find out about this until a couple months later because a counselor at the rehab center that he went to called his family to check up on his progress. Like, how's he doing?
Well, good for you, counselor.
Yeah, I haven't heard from him in a while. And they're like, we haven't seen him. And the counselor called back later on and was like, actually, I just looked him up in the database and it turns out he died in December. And that's how his family found out he had died.
That's terrible.
Yeah, his 21-year-old daughter and his older sister Dee. That's how they found out. They were just shocked. So the fact that he was on a park bench and his stuff was in a bag, that sounds like maybe he just got out of rehab and all
Right,
his
okay.
belongings were in a bag, like, or maybe he had been homeless. I don't really have more details about that.
Gotcha.
Really sad. Just this.
So much tragedy in one family.
I know, seriously. Well, former prosecutor turned attorney Christy Jack said of this case in an interview with 48 Hours in 2018 that she believed this case was not unsolved, but it was unproven.
Okay.
So, by all accounts, the people of Fort Worth to this day believe Colin Davis committed the murders. And to
Right.
believe that must be really scary. I mean, I'm sure
Yeah, 'cause he's still out there.
he's still out there living his life. He was never even charged with the other things that he was alleged to have done. And if you believe that he killed a 12-year-old, then you would have to believe he's willing to kill anybody who gets in his way. So,
Right.
pretty scary thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to know he's.
Well, and maybe not now these days, since he doesn't have the money to just flaunt around
Well,
and
yeah, but he's still out there eating
living his
Chick-fil-A and
life.
like doing whatever he wants, going to the cinema
Eating
alone.
God's chicken. Is he still married to Karen?
Well, let me get to that.
Okay, I'll wait.
In that same 48 Hours episode, they actually interviewed Cullen himself, and it was really interesting to see him answer questions because there's just like nothing there, like nothing behind his eyes. It's just, I don't know, it's just, I got an eerie feeling. You could just tell he has a totally clear conscience. He's not tormented by anything. He had no remorse.
Well, there was a remark that he says he found God, and I really hope he did.
Well, that's true. And a lot of interviewers questioned his faith and said, well, do you think that God's forgiven you for murder? Or do you think God would, like, if I commit murder right now and then later on find God, do you think I should go turn myself into the police? And he's like, well, God is your ultimate judge. So, no. If you stole something from somebody, yeah, you should return it. But his theology is really screwed. He's just really smug and he just smiles. And Maureen Maher was like, did you kill Andrea? And he's like, takes a beat. No. You know, just like if that was an innocent person, wouldn't they say, of course I didn't? It's just, it's scary. It's just weird. And they also interviewed his son Trey, and he had nothing but lovely things to say about his dad. He said, you know, he was never abusive to me. He describes his dad as a really ethical man, like strict, but in a good way, like for your own benefit. And just said that he was a godly man.
So this was the younger son, not from the two older boys that he had before he married Priscilla.
Correct. This was Karen's son that he had adopted.
Okay.
So all these years later, he still denies shooting and killing anyone. He blames Priscilla for all his misfortune, still to this day. And if you want to see a theatrical rendition of this case, you can watch the made-for-TV movie from 1995 called Texas Justice, and it's actually based on a book.
Really?
I've never seen it, so I can't say how accurate it is, but if you didn't get enough here and you need more, it's out there. I mean, I had to whittle this down to 12 pages. I could have gone on and on about this, and this could have been a three-parter probably. But like I said, and I mentioned it a few times in part one and this part two, Cullen did countless interviews with newspapers, TV stations, anyone who would have him. I mean, this guy would go to the opening of an envelope. He couldn't get enough of it. He even did a tour of the abandoned mansion for a news channel last year. Yeah, it kind of made my skin crawl when I watched it. They're walking through the mansion with him, and he's like, oh, well, this wasn't here when I lived here. And it just gave me the heebie-jeebies. I would think someone who was as notorious as him for being acquitted of a murder would maybe lay low, kind of like Casey Anthony, but no,
Well,
not
not
Cullen
when
Davis.
you don't have any guilty conscience, you know. You don't Some people just don't feel that
No.
guilt, and that's a scary thing.
I mentioned previously that Cullen had sold his mansion to a real estate developer after he filed for bankruptcy in 1984, and it has served Fort Worth as many things over the years. It was a steakhouse at one point, then it was a Mexican restaurant. Yum. And most recently, it was a wedding venue, which I'm kind of devastated that I didn't get married there.
Yeah, why did we not know this sooner?
Yeah, why didn't we know? Well, our chance is gone, Lena, and so is the chance of everybody else who's listening because the real estate developer that owns the mansion started demolition in December of last year. Dreams don't come true. Well, he is planning on building condos on that land.
Oh, of course.
And if you're not from Fort Worth, just to let you know, it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
More houses, more apartments everywhere you look.
and more and more people are coming to the area. So that land that the mansion was on is just prime real estate.
Was it all worth it, Colin? Was it worth it?
Well, that's the question for the ages. And guys, that is actually all I have for you for this sode. Wrapping up this story, I mean, thanks for hanging in there. It was full of twists and turns and ups and
Surprises and twists, yeah.
downs, downs, more downs than ups, I guess you could say. What do you think? Do you think Cullen did it? Or do you think someone else did it? Let us know. Slide into our DMs on Instagram. And what's that,
Again, I'll tell you, we
Lena?
have an Instagram.
Yes, we do.
Cousins on Crime Podcast. Come follow us, comment. We'll post pictures and chat with you.
Yeah, exactly. Or you could email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com. I would really like to know if there's someone listening out there that thinks Cullen didn't do it and they have a theory as to who else may have done it. I would entertain,
That
I would
conversation,
entertain
yeah.
that conversation. But you will have to tell me what I said in these episodes to make you doubt that. But anyways, thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time on Cousins on Crime.
Y'all.
Bye now.